How many of you are here today because life has presented tons of challenges and you're still here? You're standing. You're breathing. Everybody take your pulse. That means that every challenge you have faced in your life, you have overcame. You're breathing. You're alive. Which means that every challenge that's ahead of you, you actually ought to face with boldness. Take a look at this word. Showing an ability to take risks. Confident and courageous. A person so confident, I love this last line. A person is so confident as to suggest a lack of shame. I'm presented right now with a challenge in my life like I've never had before. Every challenge is unique. Every challenge you have is unique. My challenge is incredibly unique right now. I'm not even going to tell you what it is. But it is so big of a challenge that if I fail at it, I will be shamed. If I fail at it, I will be humiliated. If I fail at this challenge that is set before me, I'm actually going to lose some of my own identity and character that I thought that I held onto, my perceived natural abilities. In fact, it's such a big challenge that if God does not show up, I won't achieve it. If God doesn't actually intervene, I will not be able to sustain it. I won't be able to get through it. I won't overcome it. In fact, I just might die. How many of you honestly have that type of challenge in your life? And you're sitting here nodding your head going, I don't really have that. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Because tomorrow has nothing ahead of it that you will know today what it'll bring. Tomorrow presents risks. Tomorrow presents tasks. Tomorrow will present something in your life that is going to test your perceived natural ability. And guess what? Every person in here is an overcomer and can achieve it. If God doesn't show up, you just might not be breathing tomorrow. There's some tremendous challenges for us in life. But you know what I find about challenges is that we're all really good at achieving some challenges because we're good at some things. I'm really good at some things, and I know that. I have natural perceived gifts. I know what those are. Some of you have them. Some of them you're really good at cooking. And because you've worked at it, yes, but you have this weird innate ability to be able to just throw anything into a pot at the same time and somehow it comes out brilliant. And some of you, you throw anything into a pot, even by a recipe, and it doesn't come out brilliant. You can follow the recipe and it comes out. Everybody's like, yeah, you shouldn't cook. That's nasty. Some of you are good at public speaking. Some of you are terrible at public speaking. Some of you just shouldn't even talk, right? Some of you are good at eating. How many are good at eating? We're all good at eating, aren't we? Let's just be honest, we're all good at eating and we all love to eat. We're all gifted at eating. If you stop being gifted at eating, you will die tomorrow. There's the risk. Some of you are good at singing and performing. Some of you are good at mechanics. Some of you can just take a look at some complex situation with multiple parts and you go, yeah, I can put that together. I look at it and say, that's a nightmare. Right? Some of you have these innate abilities to do things that other people can't do. We all have perceptions about ourselves and perceptions about each other that we know you have natural gifts. The problem is when we're challenged beyond the natural. It's when you're challenged beyond things that you're not normally good at that you actually have to say, I need God to intervene. I don't have the answers for this. In fact, this challenge before me, if God doesn't empower me or lead me or push me, I will be embarrassed. Now I'll tell you what it is. It's leading you. How do you change people that don't want to change? And I'm not saying you don't want to change. I'm just saying, how do we lead people into change when my idea of change might be different than your idea of change? And how do we get all of us to go in the same direction that actually makes us the type of church that the neighborhood would look at and say, I don't know what is going on with that little place, but I gotta go. I gotta be a part of it. You see, if every person in here could actually see their giftedness and their talent and their perceived abilities and move beyond that to be challenged into things that they didn't even know that they could do, this church would actually become a supernatural church and not just a natural church. We'd be a church doing amazing things. You might not know it, but you are challenged today in such a way that if you don't rely on God and if he doesn't show up, nobody will get a glimpse of what God is doing in your life. See, the goal of the series is this, to get other people to actually see what the Holy Spirit is actually doing in you and in us. The goal of the series is to begin to live outside of these walls and not just live within these walls. So we just came off the heels of a Holy Spirit series that's all about, what does God do when he dwells within me? Well, if we just stop right there, then what's the point? Like, the Holy Spirit was meant to transform us for transformation. He was meant to actually gift us to be givers. He was meant to serve us so that we could actually serve. Not that we would just contain it and hold on to it, but that we would let it go. We would allow it to get into the neighborhood, that it would infiltrate people's lives in such a way that they could actually be changed. Because here's the bottom line for today's message. The future belongs to people who are bold. The future belongs to people not who are challenged, but people who are bold in the middle of challenges. That when they face things that are beyond their natural abilities, they just say, I got this, because I have him on my side. I have him within me. I have him empowering me and leading me and guiding me. Because here's another reality. Let me put it to you this way. So that's a simple statement. The future belongs to the bold. I'll give it to you this way. We all have an extraordinary capacity to create real change in people. The biggest challenge of your life might be just to experience real change in your own life, but once you experience real change in your own life, you know that you have the extraordinary capacity to actually bring change to someone else. That is the greatest challenge of our human existence. It's not just to survive, but to help people survive and thrive in their life. We have the mind-boggling resources right here within this room to create the future in people. Supernatural power in people. And some of you are just going, you know what, I'm just a little bit too superstitious for that. I trust God and I know God, but I also believe that I can't really control the future. I can't change my tomorrow. Tomorrow's just happen, right? I can't control the weather. I can't control what time the sun comes up. I can't control fate in and of itself. I heard somebody say that just this last week. A friend of mine who does triathlons, and I said, why do you do this? And they said, because it's the only thing that I can actually control, because the rest of it I can't seem to control. And that's the biggest lie of the entire universe, is that you believe that you can't control your tomorrows. Do you know why you're here today? Because you walked in. Do you know why you're here today? Because you got out of bed. Do you know why you're here today? Is because you got in a car and you drove the car here. You actually chose this existence right now, here today. You chose to be here, and I'm grateful that you chose to be here. Now I just ask you, just be here every week. Keep choosing to be here. Keep choosing to be a part of something that is going to empower the neighborhood. This is one of the best decisions you have made all week, is to come to a place, into the family of God, and to worship and to glean off one another's transformation in their life. But you're just too superstitious. You can't control the weather. You can't control people. You can't control your life. You can't control whether cancer hits you or whether sickness befalls you. You can't control your finances. You can't control your job. You can't control your boss. And so you just think that tomorrow is fate, but tomorrow is really full of faith, not fate. That when you face tomorrow with the idea that you get to control the future, that you get to actually write your story, you can actually do something really amazing with it. Because as we have talked about, you build what you love, right? And whatever you love is what you will be known for in life that you built. You build what you love. And what you love is what you will build. And at the end of your life, you will look back on your life. People will see your life and they will not just look at you and say, what did he build? They will look at you and they'll say, what did he love? Because whatever you loved is what you built. If it was wealth, you loved wealth. You built wealth. But if it was family, if it was relationships, if it was people, then people will look at your life and say, you know, he wasn't the richest guy on the planet, but man, he loved everybody. He loved people. So I want to remind you today that you and I, as human beings, are the only created living species that has the ability to write somebody else's future. Nothing else can write the future for tomorrow. In fact, you might love your dog Fido or Fluffy, but your dog Fido or your cat Fluffy cannot write tomorrow. You put a dog food in front of Fido, and you know what he does? He eats all of it because he thinks it's his last meal, because he doesn't know that tomorrow is filled with faith. Tomorrow has an existence to it. In fact, a friend of mine told me, he said, you know what I love about dogs is dogs are a lot like God, and you put it into the perspective of our relationship with God. That dogs are so faithful that they never stop being faithful to you, that the minute you walk in the door, they are reminded that you are there. And they will absolutely celebrate you. And then somebody else told me, he said, the reason why they celebrate you so much is because when you left, they thought you left for good. That every day when you leave the house and you lock the door, your dogs always think you're never coming back. That you will never show up again. And then when you show up and you walk in the door, they're like, you're alive! Yes! My favorite person in the planet! I love you! You see, this is the relationship with God, that every time we begin to walk away from him, he knows that there's a choice for you to walk towards him again. And when you do, he celebrates you. You have the ability to write the future for somebody else. No animal, no living creature other than you has the ability to create a future. Because the question is, not that you can't create the future, but what type of future will you create? The question is not, will neighborhood friends create a future? The question is, what type of future will this church create for our neighborhood? What type of future will you as a father create for your family? What type of future will you as a mother create for your family or for your wife or your husband? What type of future will you build? And you will build whatever you love most. And by the way, the best way to build anything is to love it. Best way to build anything is to love it, especially with the love of God. And it becomes supernatural. Because the future is owned by those who actually have the boldness and the courage and the creativity to actually create it and not just exist for today. They have the ability to say, I'm moving forward and I'm going to help people see a tomorrow that they've never seen before. Solomon was an amazing, amazing man, obviously. He was wealthy. And he saw his life through wealth. He saw it through riches. He saw it through his power and his authority and people that were all around him. But by the end of his life, he realized that his life was more than just the wealth and the power, that he chose to use the wealth and the power in such a way that it didn't glorify God. And so at the end of his life, he gives this written account to say, listen, take it from me. I'm going to give you some wisdom about what it means to really live. And that if you're going to really live, you exist for something other than yourself and just survival and building things, but that you would build people. So in Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verses 1 and 4, that's what we're going to look at today. And I want us to look at this timeless wisdom, but I also want us to see it metaphorically for what it would look like for you today. Because we're going to read this, and you're going to read it, and you're going to go, okay, what does that have to do with us? Because it seems so time-sensitive to a culture of farming. and not a culture of urban living. But listen to what it says. Ecclesiastes 11, 1 through 4. It says, send your grain across the seas, and in time profits will flow back to you. But divide your investments among many places, for you do not know what risks might lie ahead. When clouds are heavy, the rains come down. Whether a tree falls north or south, it stays where it falls. Farmers who wait for perfect weather never plant. If they watch every cloud, they never harvest. That seems so obviously clear, doesn't it? I read that and you just go, oh yeah, that totally makes sense for my life. How many of you guys have a grain silo in your backyard? Anybody raise your hand? Go ahead, raise your hand. Nobody. Weird. Nobody owns grain here. No one here owns any grain. Raise your hand if you own grain. Nobody. Okay, well, I guess this passage doesn't apply to us because nobody's a farmer. I am. I got a backyard now with a garden. And that thing's growing. It's awesome. It's growing crazy. Looks awesome. And then I went to the gardening place the other day and I showed this guy some pictures because I got stuff growing that I don't know what it is. Anybody have that? Like stuff's like growing and you're like, I didn't plant that. It's just growing. And so my biggest plants are plants that I never seeded. I never actually put in the ground and I can't figure out what they are. It's like either these are really big weeds or something's coming that is going to just bless the entire world because this plant's huge, right? And I take a picture of it, and the guy looks at me and goes, that's a weed. So I pulled that one. Then I took another picture of another one, and he goes, I don't know, but I think that one's probably watermelons, or I have no idea, but just let it grow. See what happens to it. I am so impatient. This is what I figured out about planting gardens. I don't want to wait for anything to show up. Like, these plants are big, and I'm, like, pulling up the leaves, and I'm looking under. I'm looking for fruit. There's nothing there. And the guy told me, he's like, well, I can tell you this. It looks really, really green, and it's amazing, but my guess is you're watering it way too much. How do you water plants too much? He goes, no, you can. You can actually saturate it so much that it just keeps thinking it's got to grow bigger and bigger and bigger and never produces fruit. He said, at some point, you got to test its limits. At some point, you got to let it droop just a little bit and actually beg for more water. And once it begs for more water, you feed it water. And it starts to actually produce things. It starts to produce fruit. Because when it starts to die, it's like, I'm about ready to die. I better seed something. I better give something off so that it plants again. I got to find a way to survive. I got to give life to something else because I'm not going to make it. But the more water I give it, it's just like, oh, yes, drink it in. I love this place. And although people walk by my yard, they look and go, gosh, that guy's like Mr. Green Thumb. Yeah, but we're going to starve to death if I keep feeding it water, right? I read this passage and I go, okay, send your grain across the seas and in time profits will flow back to you. But divide your investments among many places, for you do not know what risks might lie ahead. And I think about that, and I just go, what does this mean to us, Solomon? Send your grain across the seas, and in time profits will flow back to you. The Hebrew words that are actually used in this passage can be translated very differently. And so Ecclesiastes 11:1 in the ESV reads it this way. Cast your bread on the waters. So you can have what? Soggy bread? Cast your bread on the waters. Send them out. And you will find it after many days. Cast thy bread. This is what the King James Version, this is how it puts it. Cast thy bread upon the waters, and thou shalt find it in many days. I love the translation. I love the way it reads because there just seems to be so much hope in like a real English translation. Cast thy bread. It just seems like wisdom to me, right? But the reality is, here's what it sounds like in the Message, in a very literal translation for today. Be generous. Invest in acts of charity, because charity yields high returns. Solomon is actually saying that everything that is in your possession has the power to multiply, has the power to grow, has the power to give fruit. But so often when we possess something, our goal is to preserve it rather than let it go. Our goal is to hold on to it rather than actually be liberal with it. Our goal is so much, so many times, is to protect that which we have and keep it shiny and new. And the more we just keep it shiny and new, the less it actually bears fruit. We just keep feeding it with our own possessions. We keep feeding it with our own desires. And Solomon is saying stewardship is more than just taking care of something. Stewardship is literally taking it and enjoying it so much that you would say, I can't help myself but to give this away and share it. I can't imagine anybody not having its fruit. I can't imagine anybody not actually experiencing the joy that I feel when I have this. You see, this isn't about gardening, it's about faith. This is more about you, what's inside of you, that what is inside of you has to be coming out of you in order for it to produce any sort of fruit that anybody would look back on and say, that person loved people a lot. But the more we possess it and hold on to it, the more people say, that person loved himself more than he loved anything. The reward is not consuming it. The reward is literally letting it go. And if you think about it in the context of Solomon's day, take your grain and put it on a ship and send it across the sea. Imagine living in Solomon's day, putting something on a ship and sending it overseas. That was a scary thing. Because if I put all my grain, all my best possessions onto a ship, and then I watched it sail off into the sea, there was a good chance back then that you would never ever see it come back. In fact, probably a better chance that it would never come back. I mean, these people in Solomon's day actually had mythology that said that there were sea creatures out there ready to devour whatever you sent out. And I don't know about you, but today I can get anywhere in the world in a day. I can jump on a plane this afternoon and be in Sydney, Australia. In fact, my daughter will be doing that this week. She will jump on a plane and within 24 hours, she will be in another country. Actually, not this week because she's going to LA first, but she's going to LA and she's going to be in a different country by being in LA for the next few days, right? She can fly 3 hours and be in a completely different culture. You see, in that day, you sent your grain on a ship and you may never, ever, ever see it. And Solomon is saying, don't worry. In time, it will actually produce a reward. I mean, they actually believed that the earth was round back then. Not flat. And we know it's flat. I mean, you just send it out. You're like, you believe it's flat? I'm joking. Somebody laugh. At least, like, listen to me. I'm saying something that's supposed to be a little funny, and you guys are going, that's stupid. You're giving me that same look. But, I mean, I can get across any ocean, the Atlantic, the Pacific, the Indian, the Arctic. It doesn't matter what sea it is. I can get across it in a day. In fact, we are so impatient today that I can order something on Amazon Prime and I can't understand why in the world it's not here before 9 p.m. the next day. I mean, I like tracking it. Somebody just said to me, they're like, have you ever been that guy late at night? It's like 9:30 at night and you open the front door just to check to see if there's a package on your porch. I mean, Amazon has made Christmas available to us all the time, every day. But you know what we're doing as a church? We're shipping our very best over across the sea. We're going to let it go. We're going to release it. Because you know what I know for a fact? Is that by sending Grant overseas, that what will come of Grant when he comes home will produce a greater reward than we would ever had if we would have held on to him. And then we're going to ship my daughter overseas. Can you imagine in Solomon's day if God had called me to ship my daughter onto a ship overseas? And I would have hugged her and I would have put her on a ship and I would have watched her sail off into the distance and I would have stood there until I couldn't see it no more. And he would have called us to actually let her go. Alex Kraft is actually in Hong Kong today. I don't know if you know that. We failed to mention that last week. We had these things come up on us. Last week, I didn't know it was Grant's last Sunday. This week, I barely knew it was my daughter's last Sunday because I was trying to ignore it. So this message and this passage was actually given to me 4 or 5 weeks ago, and I had no clue that it was going to be on my daughter's last Sunday. And as I'm reading through it this week, I'm just going, yeah, you would do this to me, Lord. You would give me this passage. But as I was thinking about Alex, like literally we sent him to Hong Kong. Actually, he sent himself to Hong Kong, just so you know. We didn't choose to send Alex to Hong Kong. Alex chose himself to go to Hong Kong and then to Korea. Lauren didn't choose, we didn't choose Lauren to go overseas to Australia to YOM for 6 months to actually get trained in worship leading. She chose to do that herself. Grant did not look for us to choose for him to go overseas and to go to YWAM. Grant chose to go to YWAM. And his brother's here this morning. I looked at him at the back and I said, hey, how was your week letting your brother go? And he just looked at me and got choked up real quick. Really hard. Really hard. But the greatest thing we could ever do is take our very best and not just hold on to it, but scatter it and let it go. Let it leave our hands so that it will produce a reward that we would have never imagined if we weren't willing to let it go. What Solomon is actually telling us is this, is that the bold ship their seeds to plant as much good as they can. The bold and the courageous will actually take the challenges that they have in life and they say, we're willing to actually ship this off so that we, this person off, these people off, so that we can plant as much good in them and from them as we possibly can. And when they come home, they will show us the reward of the fruit. And I told someone this morning, I said, I wish we would have celebrated them before they left last week, but you know what we're going to do is when they come home, we're going to hear their stories and we're going to celebrate their stories. Because we didn't choose for them to go, but we get to actually reap the benefits of them leaving. And we're going to pray for them over the months and days as they leave. So the question is, to me and to us is, are you doing as much good as you can with the best that you have? Are you doing the most good with what you have in your hands for the best good of the future? Are you producing a future with what you have, or are you taking what you have and consuming it only for yourself? Are you doing everything you have to take your resources and hold on to them so that you can build your life? Or are you willing to take your best resources and say, I'm willing to give it to the church so that the future of other people's lives are changed? Now, this is not a message about me asking you for money. This is a message about me asking you for your heart. Because my greatest challenge is to get you to move forward in a mission that I'm not sure that I can get everybody to do just out of my own ability. If God doesn't show up, if he doesn't do something in you, I risk shame in my own life. And I'm willing to be shamed so that you will have a future. And some of you are saying, but you know, I don't know what to do because I'm not sure I can even make a difference. The world is so dark. It's so broken. My little amount that I can give is not going to change anything. Believe me, I've heard all those excuses. I've heard them all. Because I've actually heard them from my own heart. I've actually experienced them from my own life. And people get criticized for doing even just a little bit. And so often we will find people that are doing something are the ones that are getting criticized, and the people that are criticizing the people that are doing something are often the people who are doing very little. So I even remember Bono, the singer for U2, I've been a Bono fan all my life. And one thing that Bono did years ago is he started to take his influence, his music, his art. And he said, you know what? I'm going to do something with this that's going to change the world. And he felt like there was a way to take music and transform poverty into people's transformation in their life and build cultures with music. And he was criticized by conservative groups as well as very liberal groups, because they thought that he was actually drawing political lines when he would actually try to promote these things. In 2004, he actually started a bipartisan campaign called Make Poverty History with his music. And in 2005, he did another thing. He actually created a clothing line where he was actually employing people in developing countries to actually make this clothing, and he was paying them the same type of wages that they would be getting if he paid for it in the United States. And he got criticized over and over and over again. But one thing I love about Bono is he was not able to do everything, but he was actually trying to do something. Let's just get it out there. We can't change the neighborhood, but we're going to die trying. We can't completely change people's lives, because people still choose their own lives, right? But we can influence, and the more we influence, the more change we will see. You know what I know about Jesus is Jesus knew that he couldn't change every single human's heart, because every single human must choose the sacrifice of Jesus in order to change their heart. But he knew that by dying, by sacrificing, by giving, he would give them an option for transformation and a hope that they could live way beyond their means. So Solomon says it this way. He says, but divide your investments among many places, for you do not know what risks might lie ahead. In the NIV, I love the way it says it. It says, invest in 7 ventures, yes, in 8. You do not know what disaster may come upon you. I love that. So optimistic. You're not going to know what disaster is going to come upon you. So invest in all kinds of things, because here's the reality. No matter what you invest in, something is going to go bad. Disaster is coming. Isn't that just exciting? Isn't that exciting for you and I? Disaster is on its way. That's what you get today. Leave here today and say, hey, how was the message? It was awesome. Pastor just told us that disaster's coming. It doesn't make us feel any better, does it? And Solomon, I read this and I go, what are you talking about? And he's saying, listen, there are going to be risks no matter what is out there. So make sure you scatter your seed in all kinds of places and not just one. In not just one place, but many places. In fact, there's a term for this called diversify your portfolio. Like, it's a term that is used in financial principles today, to where they say, if you're going to invest and you invest in the stock market, make sure that you don't just invest in the stock market, in one area of the stock market. If you're going to invest in real estate, don't just do real estate. Do multiple ventures so that if one of them fails, you have backups in other areas, right? He's saying diversify your portfolio. The financial principle is not just for finances. It is for life-giving. It is for people. And here's what I want to tell you. Don't just stay in your age group. Don't just stay in your lane. Like, if you are over 60, invest in the young. If you are young, invest in the over 60. Like, every single age group is intended to be invested in, not just to be lived in. Don't just do one thing, and that includes every person in here. So don't be just good at one thing. God's saying you can be good at all kinds of things. Don't be just good at your business. Because if you're only good at your business, you're going to become a workaholic. But you can be a great businessman and be a great father. You can be a great mother and a great coworker. You can be a great banker and you can actually be a great father. You can actually do amazing things all over the place. So diversify your portfolio with what you give to humanity. Don't just stay in your lane. Don't stay in your age group. Take a look at everybody that is out there. And when you see a child that is hurting, grab their hand. Give a generous look to anybody who needs it. Give them your heart. Because honestly, that is exactly what Neighborhood Friends needs, and that's what the neighborhood needs. We need it as much as the neighborhood, and that is a church who is willing to say, we welcome anybody and everybody in here. As I said in the first week, are you willing to be loved by the neighborhood, and are you willing to love the neighborhood? It goes both ways. Are you willing to love the people who are not lovable? Are you willing to love people that you would never do business with? Diversify your portfolio. Love everybody. And love them with the love of God, because the love of God is actually what changes people's hearts. The future belongs to the bold, because the bold actually say yes so that they can yield as much as they possibly can. They expand their influence. They actually take as much ground as they possibly can. They move into neighborhoods. And you know how we're going to do this? We're not going to do this by being the coolest church in the neighborhood. We're going to do this by being the prayingest church in the neighborhood, by being the church that actually says, we're willing to pray for the lost. We're willing to actually seek the lost. We're willing to actually show people how much we love them by being on our face before our holy God. Because when we do that, we begin to be filled up with the presence of God. And what you are filled up with is what you're actually going to leave with. If you are empty spiritually, you got nothing spiritually to give. So Solomon's saying, do not hide your assets. Divide them. Invest them. Scatter them. Send them in many places. Say yes so that you will yield as much as you possibly can. I don't know about you, but I want my life to be great. I don't want to just be a great preacher. I want to be a great husband. I want to be a great man. I want to be a dad that people would look at. Somebody, just last night, I made dinner for my kids at like 9:30 at night because they all said they were hungry. So I'm firing up my grill on the back patio and I'm putting burgers on there at 9:30 at night because all they said was, Dad, could you give us something to eat? And the best compliment came when they started to eat it and their friend looked at me in the face, May Sue Street, looked at me and she goes, you are a great dad. Best compliment I could ever have in my life, outside of my wife saying, you're the best husband I could ever have. I want to be just a great preacher. I want to be a great father. I want to be a great husband. I want to be a great leader. I want to be a great friend. I want to be a great person to people who need greatness in them. Because I know that when I actually invest what is great inside of me into somebody who doesn't feel great, then I actually get more greatness back in the process. You can be great, but don't just invest in one place. Don't simply hang out with people who are like you. People ask me, why do you do these triathlons? I just had that on Facebook. A really close friend of mine for years said to me, they said, why do you do this? And I said, because I can. But I also said, because I can influence other people with this story. I have people now coming to me saying, how can I become physically and spiritually healthy? Because that's what I'm seeing in you. You're a person who's not just physically healthy, but you are showing that you are spiritually healthy, and I'm seeing that there's a connection. You see, I love swimming, and I love running, and I love biking, but I'm going to use swimming, running, and biking to do everything I can to show people Jesus. See, that's the best thing you could ever do, is take the things that you love the most and somehow transform them into God's glory. And here's why I do it. Because I actually believe, just listen to me. I actually believe that there are people outside of this building who don't know Jesus. There's people outside of here that don't have faith. I actually believe that. I actually believe there's people outside of here that are hopeless. And you're going, no, we know that. Did you just figure that out? Then why do we constantly live as if everybody outside of here has faith? That everybody outside of here has hope? What if you lived as if nobody out there does and you wanted to do everything you can to show them and give them a taste of his glory? And the question comes, how do we reach people? How do we take as much spiritual ground as we can? How do I do as much as I can with what I have? Here, Solomon says it, verse 3. When clouds are heavy, the rains come down. Whether a tree falls north or south, it stays where it falls. It's so clear. Drop the mic, walk away, right? Doesn't even sound right. Solomon, tell us something we don't know. Okay, the clouds are filled with rain and they rain. And when a tree falls, it just falls where it falls, right? I don't have any bearing on that. How many of you guys saw the clouds come in the other night? How many of you heard the thunder? How many were at the Arvada fireworks show? You were out there and you saw these billowing booms and sparks and fireworks go off. And one was like, poof, and then God thundered. Anybody there? Like, boom, and all of a sudden God's like, poof. He was like, I got that. Got you beat, right? Jake even said the fireworks show ended early because there was a lightning strike that actually short-circuited all the fireworks. It was as if God just said, I'm in charge. Let me just show you who's got this. So when the clouds are heavy, the rains come down. I mean, what does this have to do with anything? And here's how I want to translate it to you. Those clouds come over the Rockies, and they just show up. You can look on the radar, and an hour before they ever come over Arvada, they're nowhere to be found. They just start showing up. They start billowing over the Rockies right against the foothills, right as the warm air hits the cold air and it starts to build and billow. How many of you know what's inside of those clouds? What's in them? Moisture. Rain. How many of you have seen clouds that look so ominous and when they get over you, you're just like, oh, I just need rain. We need rain. We need rain so bad. And you see these massive dark clouds and they never produce a drop and they keep going. And then the ones that don't look all that bad suddenly seem to be the ones that just pour. Here's what I know about rain clouds. Some rain and some don't. Pretty obvious. But if you and I are the rain clouds, you have the ability to carry the very presence and the moisture and the power and the authority of God. But it is your choice on whether or not you will let it rain. It's your choice on whether or not you will let it go. It's your choice. So here's what I've actually heard is that there's more moisture in the atmosphere than there is in the ocean. I just looked at a really smart guy wondering if I was right. Because that's what I've heard. I don't know if it's true or not. But it seems like it's been true a lot lately that there's more moisture in the air than there is in the water, than there is in the ocean. When God's glory fills people, the more glory is in our atmosphere than it is in this room. When God's glory actually fills you and leaves here, the atmosphere gets actually filled with the glory of God. But the question is not so much, What will God's glory create? It's will you allow God's glory to create in your life? Will you allow it to do something magnificent? Because the Hebrew word glory, do you know what it means? Density. It's the density of God. It's not just the judgment and the salvation, it's also the very blessing of God in people's lives. What you contain is what you will reign. What is inside of you is what will come out of you. And some of us, we just need to get more of the glory of God inside of us so that we'll be free to give that glory of God outside of us. The bold contain his presence so that he will actually reign his blessings. Ephesians 1, my dad gave this to us in staff the other day, and I had to put it in here. Verses 22 and 23. God has put all things under the authority of Christ and has made him the head over all things for the benefit of what? The church. And the church is his body. So we are the body of Christ. We are literally his manifest presence in our culture and in our world. I get to be the manifest presence of Christ to my wife. I get to be the manifest presence of Christ to my children. I get to be the manifest presence of Christ to my church. And if I become the manifest presence of Christ in those areas, guess who becomes great? He does. He becomes great. And I get to ride those coattails, and at the end of the day, they go, man, he's a great man. Why? Not because I'm talented or gifted, but because there's something inside of me that is beyond talent and gift, and it's supernatural, and it gives, and it completely builds, and it transforms people's lives. And in verse 23, it says, and the church is his body. It is made full and complete by Christ, who fills all things everywhere with himself. Amen. Greatest news is this: you are the fulfillment of God to the world. You are the mouthpiece. You are the hands and feet. You are the people that he generated and multiplied so that his message of love would get out there. So if you hold on to the seed of his love and never give it away, then you are not fulfilling God's purpose for your life. And people say, I'm doing everything I can with what I have. You know what I say to you? Then you're not doing enough. Because just doing what you can with what you have is not enough. Doing everything that you are with what God has put inside of you and release that and give it away is literally the plan and the purpose for your life. It's beyond your resources. It taps into his. You contain what you reign. You are a cloud filled with the presence of God. And the more you get filled by the presence of God, the more you will have to give to a world that is dry and thirsty. He's saying, take my presence and ship it overseas and wait it out, because in due time it is going to produce a reward that is going to blow your mind. It's going to produce something in you that people will look at you and they will actually think it's your character. They will actually think it's your talent. They will think it, and you can actually let them know, no, all glory be to Jesus Christ. He is the one. But we will come up with excuse after excuse after excuse not to reign the blessings that are coming into our life. Because we hear these lies and we'll say things like, I'm not worthy. Someday I hope to be worthy, but just not today. I'm not gifted enough. Someday I hope to be gifted enough, but just not today. I don't have enough to give. Someday I hope to have more so that I can give. It's just not today. I don't have enough time. There will be a day when I don't have this and this and this going in my life, and then I can retract and now I'll have more time. How many of you are retired and feel like you have no more time than you did before you were retired? It's like we get busier and busier and busier. Like that's never going to change. Someday we'll get close to God. Just not today. Today I'll spend more time in his word. Someday I'll spend more time in his word. It's just not going to be today. Someday I'll fall on my face before him and ask him to fill me. Just not today. In verse 4, he says, farmers who wait for the perfect weather never plant, and they watch every cloud, and they never harvest. I look at this and I go, they watch themselves, and they never harvest. They watch who they are and what their life looks like, and they never, ever plant because they don't feel confident in who they are. You have to start to believe that the creator of the universe gave you everything that you have as a starting point to be a blessing to everything around you. That's what it's for. The bold sow, regardless of what they see. We don't wait for the clouds to clear. We plant because he tells us to plant. We don't wait for the perfect moment, because if you wait for the perfect moment, you know the perfect moment's never going to arrive. And my dad gave us this quote this last week, so I get to share it like it's mine. An excuse is a reason stuffed with a lie. An excuse is a reason stuffed with a lie. If the reason you don't serve, if the reason you don't give, if the reason you don't share your faith, the reason that you don't do anything but come and be a part of this, if there's reasons, then it's just an excuse that's wrapped in a lie. There's a lie speaking into your ears and into your mind that's saying you're not worthy, you're not capable, you're not loving enough, you don't have enough, you're never going to be good enough, you're not talented enough, you're not gifted enough, you will never amount to anything. Maybe someday you will. And the reality is, he's saying, if you just keep looking internally, you will never, ever plant for an external reward. I cannot believe that I hardly even cried knowing that I'm going to be sending my daughter off this week. Part of that is because I sent her off and I cried my eyes out. And I know what God produced in my daughter here when we sent her off. And I know what he produced in my son when we actually sent him off to school and when he's actually worshiping in another church and leading worship. Because I know the rewards that I have benefited from because of what they have done and by their boldness and their courage in the face of actually uncertainty. And so we're sending these people off, not because we chose to send them off, but because they willingly said, I have enough faith and courage to actually face something that is totally uncertain, and I'm willing to trust God in it. Isn't that powerful? Isn't that good? Somebody nod. Somebody say yes. Somebody say amen. There's the blank stares again. This is like week three. I feel like by week three, you should be like standing on your feet and cheering or something. You should be like jumping up and down. We should have like pom-poms in our hands. We should be super excited about what God is doing in our neighborhood. But I know why you feel this way, because it's a challenge. And you have a choice in the challenge. To be bold and courageous, or to say it's above and beyond me. Are you doing the most good with what you have? That's a question to ask yourself all week. What has God given me today? What will I do with what he's given me today? And how will I bless people with it? How am I going to give in such a way that I can actually transform people's lives? This type of preaching doesn't grow churches overnight, I can tell you that. It often challenges people to the point that they don't own up to the challenge and they walk away. And in a really weird way, I'm actually okay with that, because I want the people here that are bold and courageous enough to say, I have the ability to write somebody's future, and I'm here, not going anywhere. And I'm going to invite people to this place. I'm going to stand this ground. I'm actually going to be somebody who believes that I can scatter my seeds in multiple places and that I'm going to watch them produce a reward that is going to blow my mind. And I get to do it in the context of my best friends here. So would you stand? We're going to sing this song of worship. And before we go today, because we didn't do a commissioning of Alex and Grant and Lauren, we're going to use Lauren as the commissioning to commission all three of them. So we're going to sing this song, and I'm going to just ask you to, like, listen to these words. Because this is a song that my own daughter sings, and I know that she sings with full faith that God is going to pour her out and release her for the blessings of somebody else's life. And we're willingly going to do that too as parents and as a church and as a community. We're going to bless the nations, right? So stand, let's worship. Let's just sing this song together, and then we're going to pray over Lauren. We're going to pray over Grant and Luke. All right, Grant and Luke. We'll pray over Luke too, because he's sad because Grant's gone, but...